Good evening, everyone. Wow, we're here in person. So amazing. What a blessing. It's been so long. And it took a lot for us to get here. And a lot has happened since we saw each other in person. And it feels so good to be forming an energetic field that's three-dimensional, four-dimensional, maybe more, together. We have all come from near and far. And I'll just speak for myself. It's been a little hectic. There's a part of me that's kind of jangled, trying to remember everything, you know, kind of arrive. There's a part of me that's so excited to be here, to see you all you beautiful people. There's a part of me that's wondering what's going to happen this week. There's a part of me that wants to do well, you know, but do right by everybody here. And there's a part of me that wants to just sink in. I will not take this for granted. It's so precious. I want to sink in, melt in, together, deeply, to taste, to drink of all of the deliciousness of retreat and perhaps the challenges that can come too. So as the welcoming poem that Martha read says, all of those parts are welcome. Nothing needs to be left behind. And so I want to just invite us for a few minutes to just settle in. So maybe close your eyes and just notice the quality of your breath. No judgment, just notice. Notice what you feel in your body. Notice any place where energy is moving, stirring. And any places where you might feel some constriction in your body. Notice what's in your heart. Maybe lots of things. Just feel it. Maybe even feel it a little bit more. Notice the qualities of your mind. And welcome everything you're finding. And feel yourself just settling in just a tiny bit more onto your cushion or your chair. We're going to be working with a koan in this retreat that we'll be reading in a few minutes. It's a koan about a woman who led a divided life. And we all lead divided lives. We all have many parts to ourselves, different aspects. And we get to explore that together this week. We get to feel into it. And we get to explore the big field behind it all. And so for now, as we're gathering, as we're settling in, invite all the aspects of yourself. Welcome your grief. Welcome your anxiety. Welcome your anger. Allow them to sit with you and walk with you and drink tea with you. The field here is big enough for all of us, for all the parts of ourselves, for all the ancestors, for all the bodhisattvas and buddhas who are here with us. There is no part of you that is not welcome. Please bring it all in.
So yeah, welcome everybody. It's really great to be here. It's been a long time, as Megan said. It's so great to, sorry to talk so much at dinner with the no mask, you know, but it's been so great to catch up with people that, I've seen a lot of people on Zoom, but other people, you know, I haven't seen at all. So it's wonderful to be in the flesh, and we'll try to be more masked than we've been, but it's great to be here together. I want to note also and remember, I'm going to miss some people, but some of the people that we really expected to be here or hoped to be here, and Sarah's the first one that comes to mind. People had different reasons for not being able to be here. Andrew is probably going to be able to come for one day, but that's it. So there are only two teachers instead of four. Piper, you know, had to decide at the last minute not to come. Carrie will probably be here just Thursday for one day, but was not able to come to the whole retreat. And Nick, whom we haven't seen much for a while, but sat with us for years and whom we love a lot also, is not able to be here. So that's worth keeping in mind, I guess, you know, that it's special to be here. And we're also sitting with some of the people that we care about a lot who are not here. And I guess I'll start by Michael. Sarah had suggested that we ask Michael to play for us at various times throughout the retreat, and it's really beautiful tonight, so thank you for agreeing to do that. For me anyway, it kind of softened the first sit, and it made it feel kind of dreamier. I was able to dream with the music, and then when the music stopped, the sit felt a little more dreamlike, and so I want to work around to that sense of dream a little bit, which I think hooks up to other aspects of the two chans that we're going to be spending time with during the retreat. But I'll get there through a couple poems and one thing that Joan wrote. I hope it won't take too long. So in a way, the way it feels is, you know, for a long time we sat on Zoom, we did whatever we were doing, we really missed being on retreat together, and now we're really here, you know, so it's real, it's not just a dream. And already in terms of that dynamic, then in a way, the Zoom sits feel a little dreamy, you know, they're sort of in the rearview mirror in a way, and then they're gonna come back again. But, and maybe those other places where we were dreaming of being here also feel a little bit dreamy. And now for some of us, you know, we're back at a place we sat 3 years ago now that, you know, felt very special. And so there's that feeling of, you know, here we are again in this special place that has something to do with waking up. And I know also, you know, other people are joining us for the first time. So Wordsworth can be really annoying, and he's a little bit like a preacher, but there's a terrific poem that he wrote, and I'll just read you parts of it. It's called Lines. It's got a crazy title. It's Lines Composed a Few Miles Above Tintern Abbey on Revisiting the Banks of the Wye. So he comes back to this kind of spiritual place for himself that he hasn't been in years. And he brings his kid sister, Dorothy, and that turns out to be complicated, but as gender always is, but I'm not going to go into that right now. Anyway, so I'll read you some of what he says, and to me it has something of the feel of coming back to this place and, you know, what we hope for and what we feel. And then there's a way that it sort of turns toward dream in an odd way, which I'll get around to. So he says, 5 years have passed, 5 summers with the length of 5 long winters, and again I hear these waters rolling from their mountain springs with a soft inland murmur. Once again do I behold these steep and lofty cliffs that on a wild, secluded scene impress thoughts of more deep seclusion and connect the landscape with the quiet of the sky. And then there's a section where he says, oh, you know, before I got here again, it wasn't like I'd forgotten this place, but I remembered it as a kind of dream that really sustained me. He says, these beauteous forms, where he is now, through a long absence, have not been to me as is a landscape to a blind man's eye, something that he's never seen, but oft in lonely rooms and mid the din of towns and cities and COVID and Zoom, right, I have owed to them in hours of weariness sensations sweet, felt in the blood and felt along the heart, and passing even into my purer mind with tranquil restoration. And then a little bit further on, he says something about what it feels like, you know, to be here again, what the experience has meant to him in the past, and he feels it again. He says, well, with an eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. And then you think it's like, oh, great, now we're here. So that's the end of that story. And then very soon it turns toward either a kind of slightly melancholy or slightly tender tone. And he says, and now with gleams of half-extinguished thought and many recognitions dim and faint and somewhat of a sad perplexity, the picture of the mind revives again. So he's seeing really in front of him those things that are there. And then there's this really odd turn where he says, I'm here, but I'm already remembering the time when I won't be here and this will be a memory. And the annoying thing about Wordsworth, which is not going to be like this retreat, though there is a thing in Zen that's like this, is he wants to put it in the bank in a way. It's like, I'm going to store up this memory, and when I'm screwed later, you know, it's going to bail me out, you know. But there's also this sense, in a way, that already as he's here, the place feels somewhat dreamlike because he's got in his mind, I won't be here that long. So he says, here I stand, not only with the sense of present pleasure, but with pleasing thoughts that in this moment there is life and food for future years. And there's that odd thing where, in a way, it's already passed into memory even while he's there. And so, at least for me, it has something of that kind of dreamlike quality. So here we are in our Midsummer Dream Retreat. I want to read just about a page of some really beautiful stuff from Joan Sutherland's earlier book, Vimalakirti and the Awakened Heart, that I'm sure most of you will remember. But it's about that sense that our lives are sure real enough, but there's a dreamlike quality to them. And I guess partly what I'm suggesting is that maybe that's one thing we'll feel along with a lot of other things as we look at the koan over the next few days. So here's Joan. She's talking about pretending, and I won't try to define what she means by it because I think it'll be clear. She says, it's starting to go a bit dreamlike and mysterious inside this pretending. Yunmen, another Chan teacher, asks a question that takes us further along that path. See how vast and wide the world is. Why do you get up and get dressed at the sound of the morning bell? Why, in the midst of the unfathomable vastness, do you get up every morning when the alarm goes off and start another ordinary day? Why do I come out of the deep space of sleep every morning to put on my human skin and go out and live a human life? Maybe it's because each of us is the vastness manifesting in a particular way. You're this person, I'm that person. There are the bird persons under the eaves and the ground cover persons just beginning to spread in the courtyard. We put on our clothes when the alarm goes off because for another day we accept the invitation to be the vastness taking this form, and we'll try not to be stingy about it. We'll pretend to be human beings in our own human skins, not in the sense of a false performance, but remembering that we're both born and unborn, named and unnamed, human and everything else in the universe too. There's a sense of play about this. And then just a little bit further on. I marvel as my hand figures out moment by moment what it means to be a hand, and my heart learns what a heart is on a sunny day, on a sunny morning after days of fog. Are they, am I, pretending? Not exactly, but sort of, if pretending means a series of assays and approximations, one not knowing flowing into another with lots of pauses to listen. Here's my favorite thing, everything that John's ever written. So, outside my window are subatomic particles pretending to be trees. The world isn't only a dream, but it is in part. How do we tend to a dream? So, I started reading Shakespeare this week because I thought, I'm the English professor and it's a Midsummer Retreat, so everybody's going to ask me about a Midsummer Night's Dream and I haven't read it in a long time. So I read about two-thirds of it and it's great, but I thought, that's not it, it's not. And then I thought, oh, what I need to be doing is reading The Tempest. So I started reading The Tempest. So Act 4, Scene 1, a quick backstory. Prospero has been screwed out. Well, first of all, he's kind of an esoteric and a Zen student, so he's mostly been interested in reading esoteric books and the sort of magic that makes possible. And so he was the Duke of Milan, or as they say in English, the Duke of Milan. And so his brother sort of screws him out of the dukeship, and then he gets put on a boat with his daughter Miranda, and lots of things happen, and he comes to an island, and then he uses his magic, and everything kind of gets resolved. But so this is a moment where the deal he's put together is that his daughter Miranda is going to fall in love with and marry the son of the king of Naples, who was his enemy and helped screw him. And they all supposedly were going to get drowned, but then they were saved, you know, because it was magic anyway. So they're getting married, right? And so he's got to do it in style on this island where he's been exiled. And so since he's a magician, he takes all the lots and lots of the Roman gods who perform this kind of beautiful little pageant for them. They're getting married, you know. And then he dissolves it. He makes it go poof. And so what he says in this little speech is, he says, well, so I told you all these things were pretend and now they're gone. And then he says, oh, actually, you're back in your real life now, but your real life has a dreamlike kind of going poof quality that's very much like this imaginary pageant that you experienced, right? And so that starts just to kind of cue you up a little bit, and then I'm almost done. But when he says, and like the baseless fabric of this vision, so like this imaginary play, I've had these, you know, phantasmal gods put on for you. Now I'm going to talk about the stuff in the real world. And it sounds sort of fanciful to us because it's, you know, a long time ago, so it's got castles in it and stuff like that. But he's just saying, you know, like the cars and the floor and the city where you live, all that stuff in a way is just as dreamlike, and you yourselves are as well. So I'll read that and then just say one or two other quick things. So really beautiful speech. He says, our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, which I think means all the people that will come to inherit the globe, yea, all which it inherit shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. So what's it like to hold this sense of things as dreamlike? I think for us, one thing it doesn't mean is that things aren't also real. You know, they're real and they're dreamlike at once. And it also doesn't mean for us, I think, that we're going to wake from this dream into some other thing like emptiness that's actually real and isn't a dream. So how do we live this dreamlike quality at the same time as we take our lives as invaluable, intensely valuable, as live it once only and then that's it? And I think one of the things that the koan we're going to be spending time with asks us to do is to hold both those things in the picture, you know. And I won't try to say much more about it, but I think, so some of the stuff that Megan talked about and also this sort of dreamlike sense of who we are is also something that I think we'll, you know, bump up against as we're spending time with the koan. And I guess my sense would be just, you know, how do we get a feel for holding both aspects of that, both feelings about it, and maybe the kind of rhythm of their interaction, things seeming, you know, kind of hyper-real, more real than they ever did, and also dreamlike. And so I want to encourage you also to allow, here's one thing I'll say. So sometimes if we're being really rigorous about our sitting, we think if we get sort of blurry and dreamy, we're screwing up and we're not being serious enough Zen students. And I mean, there are ways that that could happen, but in general, when things get blurry or dreamy, that's golden territory, I think. So I would encourage people to dream with the dream if it comes for you. So thank you.